This is straight out of Crumpton with your host, Greg Crumpton.
Good day, everybody. Proud to be coming to you today, as usual, from beautiful Greenville, South Carolina. Beautiful out here today. It is a super busy time for everybody. We're coming up upon the end of the summer, and there is a lot of stuff going on, work-wise, home-wise, just name it, and it's happening, seems like. So hopefully things are going well for everybody out there. I was thinking about this morning, I love the fact that every day we get a fresh chance for success and excellence. My wife and I are talking about how the rearview mirror is really small in the car and windshield is really big. So you get more to look forward to and you have less chance to look back, which is a good thing because you can't do much with history other than learn from it. So I thought that was just something interesting that rattled around in my brain today. But it's good stuff. So having looked out in my windshield today, I have somebody really cool joining us today on the podcast. It's a lady that I've met a few times remotely. We have yet to meet in real life, but one day we will. But we've been on a few things together. We've done some podcasting together and social exchanges and what have you. But today we are joined by Stephanie Brown, and Stephanie is a construction technology advisor. And like others that we've had, seems like a good number, she's a Canadian. So we get another Canuck on the show and we get to learn a little bit more. So Stephanie, before we jump in and start having too much fun, why don't you tell us a little bit about you, what you do, and why you do it?
Terrific. Good questions, Greg, and so glad to be here and really pleased to be on your podcast. As Greg said, I'm Stephanie Brown, and I founded a company called Intelligent Construction Opportunities. And the whole force behind me forming this company with the small crew that I run it with now is because I felt there were gaps in the industry, and I think there are still gaps between construction professionals and construction technology providers and developers. There, to me, in my own experience, there was too much of a gap between the two where perhaps there was a lot of square pegs and round holes happening with software in the industry. And although I think we're still coming a long way from that, and I think that Gemba walks and different work processes are finally making their way into technology in the way that the professionals use technology. That's why I began Intelligent Construction Opportunities. So what I do is I do two sides of the aisle. I help on the construction professional side, helping people to source and select their software. But on the other side, I'm also helping construction technology providers to be able to showcase and highlight the actual transformations that they are providing in their software to their unique audiences and what they're trying to solve.
Well, both sides of that aisle are not lacking for fun people to hang out with. As we know, all construction, regardless of the trade, if it's general contracting or electrical or mechanical, is chock full of some really interesting characters. And we like to kind of dive into the people side of the equation and how people affect our lives and our jobs and our home life and how those things all kind of blend and or overlap. How have you seen the industries, plural, kind of evolve in regard to people, Stephanie? Do you see, maybe I'll ask a question. Do you see a shift back towards more human interaction, even though we're a highly technical group as a group of humans? Or are you of the mindset that AI wins and humans are just there to push some of the buttons to make all the connections. Where are you at in the equation?
I feel right now that we are at a precipice in time at the quote unquote beginning of actual AI application and generative AI, where we have the best chance, particularly in construction industry, to be able to have a voice in what these technologies look like. And although OpenAI and the major players in the AI development are scraping and scraping and scraping everything that, and anything that we're putting into their LLMs right now to further train their models, we can full stop decide what goes into those models or what doesn't based on how you might be a little more coy with what you're asking, for example, ChatGPT to do for you. But I really feel we're in the middle right now where we've got to take the power back. We have to understand what we're giving away and giving up to. I know, Greg, you and I have been working, you know, offside on a little bit of a project with somebody that one construction technology vendor in particular that has provided an overlay with the privacy for our industry. And this is why I feel we're right in the middle of understanding what the general technologies are doing for you, but what do you really need to have happen in on the job site in particular, but obviously in tandem with the back office. And now's the time to speak up and say, don't tell me what a workflow is. You've never, as one of my good colleagues, Heath, says, you've never been on your hands and knees in a cramped space trying to install pipe with bleeding knuckles. So I think it's really...
I like Steve already.
He's right. He's right.
Absolutely.
Right. Called me out when we were talking about AI and stuff. This is why I'm saying has been too much of a, not only a disconnect, in my opinion, a chasm between software development and not really understanding the dynamics and ever-changing dynamics that happen, never mind on the job site generally, but individually, task by task by task by task. From the electrical to the plumbing to concrete pours, it doesn't matter. And also, even on the job site, Greg, as you know better than me, the individual trades, because they're busy doing their own trade, don't even know what the other issues are on the site, let alone throwing an app at you and saying, yep, fix the problem now. Just download it and start feeding data into it.
Yeah, that's interesting how you just summarized about the different trades. Don't even know some of the complex issues that go on. But it comes down to superintendents and general superintendents communicating well what comes out of the job meeting. And, so many times you've seen the game where you tell a story and you tell a story and you tell a story, and by the end of the darn thing, nobody even knows what the story is anymore. So I think that the intersection of technology and technicians and workers and work to be done is really a cool point, because it really comes down to communication. And I think that I'm like you. I think we're at a really fun moment in time to where we get to see what has been done. We're educated enough now as a populace to see what can be done. So we're at that weird moment of how much of this, how far to the right toward more digitization do you turn the dial, or, and those have to be very micro adjustments until you know what the heck you're doing. So what I like to think about in technology is, if you don't have a telephone and you come up with a telephone that is a rotary dial with a cord on it, that's a huge advancement. And then you go from a telephone to a big honking bag phone, but there's no cord attached. Huge advancement. Then you go from that big thing to something that, you know, a 14 trillion billion people carry in their pocket now. Another huge advancement. But we're now at the point of making micro tuning adjustments. We're not going from nothing to the rotary phone, or we're not going rotary phone to mobile phone. We're talking about micro adjustments. And I think that if you look at the AI world in comparison to that telephone depiction I just laid out, we are just now beginning to figure out that we need a rotary phone. You know, we're way back in the process, and it'll be fun to watch the advancements of technology in so far as AI. But then what are the plateaus, and then what are the next steps? And then I hope I'm around long enough to see it. I'm 60 now, so who knows? But I would love to see it where we've got this thing really figured out, and that we begin to be able to tweak it as opposed to making these gigantic chunks of progress. Because it, when you get to little bitty incremental adjustments, you know you're really doing well.
And I would agree with you, but I do think what's unique about this time, using your analogies of the transition of the, I'll say, the story of the telephone, so to speak, is that AI is intaking your information, but it's your chance to be able to shape how you want AI to respond to, for example, how you run your jobs.
Yeah.
You know, it's capable of a lot, but it's also incapable of the unique details that is construction, and that is unique from a competitive perspective for each contractor and each subcontractor. And it's time to take back that power and understand how AI serves you now, but how do you want it to serve you?
Yeah, personally. Yeah, now that's a great, great statement. And, you know, I also think about a lot, like, when do we bifurcate AI for, okay, make me a cool Taylor Swift image versus show me the best way to pour concrete on the 17th floor of a building at 3 a.m. Those are, and I know it's all about the query, but it's also about, and you used LLM, large language model, that you're able to tap into and feed from. But I don't think that we as a world yet are sophisticated enough to figure that out. We're still thinking that Taylor Swift stuff is cool, while we're figuring out, you know, I can really figure out how to maximize my job site if I use AI as a tool and not as the demigod of the site. You know, we have to use it as a tool, because I still think people are heavy in the equation as we're using our logic and reasoning to apply AI tools. That's my take on it.
Well, I think your take is right. I mean, you know, the more construction guys I speak with, I mean, we share, you know, somebody, you know, in our common network, Jesse Hernandez, and I just love how he shares, you know, the sort of the plumbing realities of what it means to work on a commercial job. And, you know, we've got a podcast we do ourselves, Steph and Jess Build an App Show, because what we're trying to do is get to what the actual skilled trades on the site experience day in and day out, and what if any technology aligns with their experience. And this is in alignment with what you've just said, because, for example, There are things that they know as professionals, even just in the plumbing profession, or it could be mechanical. As long as you've been doing something for a long time, you as a professional skilled tradesperson know how to jimmy something or get around something. And when the BIM model doesn't have the right dimensions, because it's not a perfect world when you get on site, and, you know, whatever dynamics are that are fighting the perfection that came down the pike in that BIM model and are not reality, that skilled tradesperson knows what to do with what tools to get around that.
Yeah.
Better Bet Your Boots, it's not something that they downloaded from an app that gave them the answer.
No, that's just human scar tissue, and it's hard to replicate that.
Well put. I love it.
All right, so I want to jump back a little bit. And how in the world did you get into even thinking about technology in the construction world from a background state? And the other question I always like to ask is, who influenced you into how some of your thought processes are?
Well, okay, here goes the long story short, Greg.
All right.
I have obviously two parents.
Hey, so that's a plus.
one of them came from a little horse town in Sicily, Picino, right at the boot of Sicily, and came here when he was maybe 16, 17. And when he got off the boat at Ellis Island and made his way, however he did, to Canada, I don't know how that worked, but he did. He was holding a piece of rope. Thought he, when he got off the ship, that he'd have to find a donkey and he'd need the rope to tie the donkey up. Anyway, he came here not speaking any English, all of the which you would think is a regular immigrant story. And he started working in construction, which was always the place that absorbed the newest immigrants. And I believe that's still true today. Anyway, long story short, he started his own sewer and water main construction company. And he built it up and died very prosperously, was knighted by the Pope, whether you're Catholic or not Catholic, for his charitable contributions. He was responsible for bringing many, many people over, not only from his town, but the general region of Sicily, to come and, you know, become the labor of his company. But he had to sponsor them, of course. And so it's kind of in my blood. I have to admit, I did not know him well. There was friction in families, as there always is. But I certainly, you know, respect what he did, respect his contribution. And then I've got my grandfather on the other side, who was in steel, you know, fabrication and steel refurbishment rather. And so I just, as I get older, I realize nothing exists without infrastructure. Yeah. And so that's what, to answer your question about what advises my philosophy and my interest in this, is that all of this drives infrastructure and the wheels that turn in our society. And that's why I am such a strong advocate of skilled tradespeople, because without them, we have nothing. And no matter the greatest tech, without them, we have nothing.
You know, that's something I think about. Like, I love that story, by the way. I get it. You know, I mean, it hits me. When I think about it, Our countries, plural, yours and mine, and I've been to Toronto, and I've been to in the middle of Canada, Winnipeg. Yeah, and that's my two experiences other than Vancouver Island. I find, first of all, I love the people. I think the work ethic of the Canadian culture from my exposure is strong. I also think that you guys are ahead of us in recognizing the need for skilled trades earlier on in the kids' education environment. I think this year, this school year, goes into effect where they can start choosing a trades program for their 11th and 12th year, or as y'all say, grade 11 and grade 12, where we say 11th grade. I love that. But so I think that there's a good culture there of recognizing that need. I wish we could get going quicker here. I know there's a lot of different people trying, and we've got a lot of different efforts going on, but they're not coalesced very well. We have a lot of disparate ways that we're trying to conquer it, where you guys seem to have more streamlined with government and educational boards more in alignment.
Well, you know what I've noticed? I mean, the more and more I work with Americans in construction, I realize the difference between our governments. I used to think we were more alike, but I think in the middle we're more alike. But generally speaking, the Canadians have been conditioned to be more reliant on government. So it's government down. So yes, we are the ones that by and far create the very programs you're talking about, and therefore spread them out throughout the provinces, which are equivalent to your states, for application, or they're done individually by those provinces. But we are just more government down, whereas you are, and this is what I love about America. I've got a nephew who's moving to New York City on Friday. He's been transferred there by one of our major banks. And you're all innovation. You're innovation up because you don't have the reliance on the government structure, because you are a republic. And the one thing that I think so often gets missed in your politics, in my opinion, is what makes America great, like truly great, is your innovation. You can't look at any major product or service that hasn't been developed in the last, well, since I could go further back, but I'll say in the last 30 years, and you've created it, like, from nothing. From,
you know, it's, well, I agree with you on what makes our country great. You know, we're going through a heck of a identity crisis right now. We got this big election coming up, and I am in support of capitalism, and I love to see people create opportunities. I don't care, you know, how you vote, as long as you're voting for the common good of what we have been doing for, you know, 250 years. 'Cause I'm a patriot, you know, at heart. What I try to do is to help young people. And a lot of that is giving back to the industry that has been so good to me, so that the next generation can keep it going. You know, I love that concept of grinding it out. I'm a grinder. I love to get up and I love to work. But I'm also of the mindset that you do have a federal arm that can help programs thrive by placing ideas and content, and because we're big, we're like y'all, you know, you got a lot of territory to cover. So there's a fine balance. I'm not anywhere close to more government in my head, but I think government that uses common sense would be really good. And a lot of times yours nor mine does that very well. So,
well, I think on the face of it, I can get very irritated with politics either side. But at the end of the day, I think it's because it's set up to be fragmented. And that's why I believe in grassroots movements. That's why I believe in the people that push these things. And as you say, in America, you do have lots of groups trying to help, you know, further new generations. But I also feel that where that got dirty, if I dare say so, was elevating formal education as though it was the only thing our society needed.
Absolutely.
You can have all the MBAs in the world. You can have all the business analysts in the world. But at the end of the day, a building is going up, irrespective of either of those roles.
Right. Somebody's got to be able to flush the toilet and make sure it works.
Flush the toilet, turn the light on.
Right. Front.
I mean, you know, when I did a little bit of reading on, you know, sewers and water mains because of my background. But I mean, what an infrastructure. And what happens to that infrastructure alone just when, you know, you've got torrential rains and the sewers can't handle it? And who goes to fix it? Hi, skilled trade that understand what it means to climb down that teeny little ladder and know what's broken, where the mains are running, how to fix them, how to restore them. I mean, that's only a piece, a little piece. But anyway, I'm very passionate about it because I feel that we've become big and fat in our minds about what is valuable.
Well, we take it for granted. You know, I shared this with a guy at church yesterday. We were talking about our last week, and he does some traveling, and I was traveling last week. And I said, you know, it's pretty funny when you're sitting on an airplane and somebody's complaining about the Wi-Fi speed. that's when we know that we're spoiled rotten.
Bring up air travel. I mean, the older I get, the more I'm profoundly amazed that I am literally in a seat with a little bit of metal separating me from falling out of the air.
Right.
We all the time, and we just think, we don't even think about it. It's just like you said, like, well, how come I can't get a beer on this flight or whatever?
Yeah.
You know?
It's pretty.
Hackers aren't good enough.
Right. Yeah. That's first world problems, as they say, but pretty comical. But, you know, you mentioned New York with your nephew moving there. I would love, and this is kind of a weird thing, and a lot of people probably freak out if they had to do it, but I would love to go on a tour of the infrastructure under the street levels of Manhattan.
Oh,
you know, just to see all the electrical vaults and the sewers and the, you know, the water drain off and the water makeup. I mean, God, can you imagine the miles of crap under that city, let alone people running fiber optic cable? And, you know, I mean, it would be really fun for a geek like me to get to do that. But anyway, I'll wait on Eric Adams to call and arrange that tour for me. We'll see what happens. Maybe he's listening. Who knows? But
yeah, right. You know, Greg, you bring up something really good, though. I think, so this is what I'm interested in doing as I grow out what I'm doing with my own content creation. And that is to bring back the awe of what we're all doing to the younger generation.
Well, part of that was what you just said about the airplane travel. You know, a piece of aluminum skin protects you from minus 50 degrees at 500 miles an hour.
To me, we've lost our minds. We've just lost. I mean, as we take so much for granted and expect, I don't know. Well, how we define a quality of life? Only two and three generations ago, those people would have literally died for.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And what we do as a result of their pain and their innovation and their all of that we stand on. One of my favorite shows, Finding Your Roots. I love it.
Never seen that one.
Oh, you've got to catch it. Just YouTube it. Last name is Gates, first name Henry. I believe it started on PBS, but I can't say it for sure. But oh my God, it's amazing. And then at the end of it, he takes celebrities' backgrounds and whatever, but he's not really Hollywooded about it. He's very technology about it and historically accurate in what he says. But I was going to say one thing that was really, really interesting is at the end of it, he shows everybody's DNA report. And it's sometimes shocking to find out that very white people have some portion of black in them and vice versa, or all the things you might think you are, but you don't really know until you start digging, you know?
Well, I think our personal biases, our biases, as some people like to say, just because you look white in the mirror, you may not want to know what's in there. But I think that's what makes us all so cool, is that we're a bunch of mutts. You know, we all may look like Labradors, or we may look like dachshunds or terriers, but we're all mutts at some point, you know, regardless of how finite we want to define ourselves in the mirror every day. So,
absolutely. So anyway, it just, and one of my favorite statements is, you don't know what you don't know.
So true. And the older you get, the more you realize that. So, good stuff. All right. So tell me, let's just take a few minutes here. I want to be respectful of everybody's time, and I want to make sure that they, you know, it's like anything you listen to, different people have different hot buttons on different parts of the conversation. This part, I'd love to ask you of where you see technology in the hands of skilled tradesmen going. Where are we? Is it a device? Is it a helmet with a screen around the front instead of a visor? What do you see technology at the sight level or the windshield level? How does that affect us going forward?
Well, I think that it absolutely has to be toolized, meaning that however it shows up, it has to be is readily available, and then I'll say put awayable as much as that hammer or that level or that measuring tape is. So yes, I mean, I guess because it is a digital thing, what I would see is more like an Apple Watch, or yes, in the helmet, probably better if the skilled trade was wearing it. That's why there are wearables.
Yeah.
And I think that is where the digital integrations for whatever kinds of technology that particular skilled trade has to work with should be. So
I could not agree with you more. And here's my thought process. I've got this nice cask helmet.
Yeah.
And I'm putting my helmet on for those who can't see. Let me take my glasses off. But I really feel like that this safety lens is going to aid people really well in a augmented reality kind of way. So that if you've got this lens down, and maybe it's two lens, you've got one protected for just common eye protection, and maybe a secondary lens that comes down for augmented reality, and you're looking at a BIM drawing overlaid on what you're actually looking at. I think that would be a really cool way to use technology going forward. And I don't think we're that far from it. If you think about how precise our GPS has become, or maybe better said, how precise the government has allowed us to access GPS, because they can do it real finitely, and ours is, you know, within a few feet most of the time. But I just think that being able to flip a lens down and seeing the layout of the conduit or seeing the layout of the piping of what it will look like, so that now I, when I flip my lens up, I can start laying out my hangers to make that.
And also what you just actually illustrated here, Greg, is the ease of it. It should be easy. You've got your helmet on already. You've got your hard hat on already. So, you know, then you put a specialty glass for that particular trade that then has all the software. Yes, absolutely. And I'm sure there are pieces of this out there, and then there's more that's going to be worked on. But I also feel that we have to keep making technology, as I say, more like your tool belt. It's like, just, you wouldn't get on a job site without your hard hat. You wouldn't get on the job site without your safety vest. These things just have to be integrated like tools.
Yeah, and I think they will be. I think that, you know, CASC, I guess, is an Italian company based on the flag on their little tightening device, but little things they're already doing, earphone holes for your earbuds to go through, you know, they're getting there. And that's why I bought this, really, was just to start kind of monkeying around and thinking about it. And because I feel like that that's where we're going. You don't have to go back to the job trailer or carry around a set of drawings or an iPad. You're going to have it right here on your helmet. That's my thought anyway.
I couldn't agree with you more. And there's so much potential there. There's so much potential. But then there's also security. You know, there's always security. So what does that mean physically for the hard hat, you know, as well as, you know, damage or loss or, you know.
You mean because we still break hammers, you're concerned about the technology in the helmet? How dare you?
Well,
I say that a lot around our company, because when we started out in my side of the industry with digitized toys, gauges, instruments, I'm thinking, I broke a ball peen hammer one time, and I'm about to start carrying around Bluetooth connected devices. But it's weird how we adapt to what we have to carry, and but we get there, you know. So I don't worry about that long term, because Stephanie, the Gen Z people who are coming into our industry, they've been carrying around devices for years. This is not new to them. It's new to people like me that are 60 that have not always had or been tethered to a device. So I think it's going to be an easier transition than a lot of people realize once we get the technology piece figured out, to your point, wearable, half wearable. But I think that augmented reality is going to be a big impact for our industry, from service. You know, imagine having that lens where you can pull it down while you're on a wiring diagram, while you're troubleshooting, and have it more embedded technology, and being able to, you remember the Google Glass technology of 10 years ago, being able with your eyes to scroll pages of documents without having to take your hands out of the electrical compartment while you're searching that. I mean, it's just, I love it. I'm excited by it. So,
well,
but I'm crazy about that.
Right. So I do think that this is the way. I mean, everybody talks about AI, but because Bill Gates's whole gist, or thrust rather, is to have personal assistance, it's not just on the construction site. It'll be, if you're an insurance adjuster, what you will have that is in relation to that.
Yeah.
But in construction in particular, to me, it should be just around the corner, because it's been a long time coming. But think of you just think of the safety elements alone that you can course correct for. I mean, if that helmet that you had, you talked about your wife's conversation earlier today about, you know, I love to say as you get older, you have more rearview mirror and less windshield.
Yeah.
Imagine having a 180 degree periphery all the time of what's happening in your space.
Yeah.
Again, it's enabled because not just because of the VR component in this device, but all the other factors and how you can build them into such a device.
Yeah. You know, I think about this, the shortage of skilled workers. Tools like that enhance the learning capability by a speed of, I would think, at least double, you know, because you're getting exposed to stuff and you're course correcting on the fly and you're learning on the fly in a safe environment, you know. So I know we could talk all day, but life calls and there are other things to do, so we can't talk all day, but we did talk a little bit. And Stephanie, I want to just thank you for taking time and sharing a little bit about what you're doing and why you're doing it. And I love your future outlook. I think that's awesome. I'm excited by that. I never want to say I wish I were younger, because I've learned a ton of stuff in my years. I do want to see how this develops, so I don't want to croak out too early before I get to see some of this fun stuff hit. And look, if my big goofy self has thought of it, I know there's somebody really smart at MIT that's working on it. So I take solace in that.
Yes, that's true. But I still feel the industry must lead them, not them lead you.
No, that's true. True. It's got to be a collaboration. Got to be.
That's our opportunity, is to be a collaborator now. That you just called out the most important word in all of this, is to be a collaborator.
Well, speaking of collaboration, tell people where they can find you and follow along with all the fun stuff you're doing. What's the best way to get in touch or stay in touch with you?
Is a good place. Again, my company is Intelligent Construction Opportunities. You can find me at my website at www.intellops, that's INTELLOPP plural with an S, intellops.com. And you can find my YouTube channel similarly by just doing a search on Intelligent Construction Opportunities. You'll see lots of good interviews there with specific techs and particular construction technology providers. And DM me on LinkedIn if you're so inclined. I'm always looking out for new technologies and really understanding what, you know, what is going on behind the scenes and the roadmaps that a lot of these technology providers are trying to enable and have enabled.
Well, Stephanie, and for those listening, obviously she is not hard to get in touch with. So Stephanie Brown, thank you for taking time with us today. I also want to say a big thank you to everybody who has taken a little bit of their life and listened to this episode or pieces of it. If you want more, you can always go to gregcrumpton.com. There is a podcast tab on there. It's kind of a funky thing. It looks like almost like a roulette wheel. So play the roulette wheel and pick your poison. But you can also find us on Apple, Spotify, and all the other places that you get your podcast content from. And without further ado, I hope you and your people all have a successful week and life and career. And as a final note, Stephanie, thank you very much. And I look forward to staying in touch with you.
Right back at you, Greg Frumpton. Have a good one.
Thank you.